Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're exploring Chinese real estate and taking the temperature of this fascinating market. Armed with the findings of a new research piece from UBS, we'll gauge whether unprecedented levels of prices and activity are poised to slow and ask the authors of the report to give us their base case market view going forward. As ever, we'll ask them the question of what all this means for the investor, eager to best position themselves and their portfolio to mitigate risk and maximise returns. Will diversification and the prioritising of earnings over capital gains be watchwords? We start with the co-authors behind the research piece out of the UBS Wealth Management Chief Investment Office, strategist Thomas Verragut and economist Sandra Wiedmer. Thomas, Sandra, thanks to you both for being on the programme. And indeed for talking us through the Chinese real estate piece. Thomas, perhaps we'll come to you first of all. I guess this piece is about looking at this market, assessing the risk potentially of a crash, pondering how long the boom is sustainable for. Was that the kind of starting point that you and Sandra took?
Yes, exactly. We wanted to look again. Last time I personally published as a real estate analyst on China was 2011, and we wrote at that time 2015 will be a turning year. And indeed, we had big fears, if you remember, regarding a crash and hard landing of China. And that was also related to the real estate market. And now it's 3 years later, and we're still here. And the market is still growing. We still have a lot of construction. But again, we see China fees coming again, especially regarding financials, regarding the currencies, volatility, and so on. The interest rate increase in US that has an impact on China and so forth. So that was, again, a good starting point to look again in the Chinese real estate market and looking at the perspective.
And Sandra, if I can ask you next, I guess, therefore, given that that's the sort of introduction as Thomas describes there, if we look at the sort of UBS base case, it's still, I guess, the report suggests looking at sort of a soft landing. I wonder, what's the key reasoning behind that? Is it because the Chinese real estate market is still essentially government controlled, government regulated? That must ameliorate a number of concerns.
Yes, exactly. We expect a soft landing because it's not like a typical market economy, but because the state is heavily involved and controls the market. And that's why we don't expect a crash, but we think it's unlikely.
And let me ask a bit about how sort of interconnected, Thomas, the real estate market is. You've already mentioned in your first remarks about broad brush through the whole of the construction industry and so forth. Presumably it's quite complicated. There's a web of affiliated sectors and businesses that could be affected one way or the other.
That's right. Direct portion of real estate within GDP, Chinese GDP is estimated by our economists at about 13% only. But that's also twice above the level you would see over the long term in advanced market economies. So it's still very high. But much more interesting work we have done within UBS is looking, as you said, at the interaction between real estate and construction and all the deliveries and the commodities consumptions is related to this construction boom and real estate boom. So we come to at least 25% of the economy being directly or heavily, indirectly, in a sense, linked to real estate. So that means we have, based on our economist, Tao Wang in China, a 10% correction in the real estate market overall would mean 2.5 percentage point less GDP growth. And that's huge, of course.
Sandra, one thing I wanted to ask you about, and there was an interesting section of the piece about this, was about oversupply and some of the issues around that. And of course, I guess the context of this is that the real estate boom we've seen over, 20 years or so is essentially unprecedented. And where there's no precedence, that always makes things a little more tricky. But there are signs of oversupply, aren't there? And yet construction continues apace.
Yeah, residential floor space under construction amounts to 5.3 billion square meters, which is a very high number. And if you assume, for example, 80 square meters per unit and 3 persons per household, that would be enough space for 20 million people, which means like half of the new urban population of the past 20 years. But we see also there are around 50 ghost cities existing in China. And from there you see that there is a lot of houses, also empty houses. And what we see as well is that the major demand group, which are the age cohort 25 to 44 year old people, that those are declining. So we assume a bit less demand because of this declining of this main driver of residential houses.
More from Sandra and Thomas in just a moment. Next, though, we bring in Monocle 24 regular Jonathan Fenby, former editor of the South China Morning Post and now chairman of China Research at T.S. Lombard. Jonathan Fenby, if we take a step back here and look at the very big picture here, give us a sense of what perhaps might preoccupy investors, for example. Indeed, if we don't focus on real estate alone, but look at some data that this report highlights, for instance, rising debt and slowing growth, the debt to GDP ratio, are those the big potential worries as you see it? Or does that old concern of policy missteps, potential policy missteps, actually present more of a concern? I guess the whole economy is a much more complex thing to handle than it was even, a couple of decades ago.
Because economic decision-making at the top has been so centralised under Xi Jinping over the last 2 to 3 years, obviously the room for mistakes becomes all the greater. And I would say, underlying that, the basic problem is that while Xi Jinping and the people around him recognise the need for economic modernisation, both in terms of getting into new technology sectors and in making the economy more effective, they are still absolutely wedded to the state direction run by the Communist Party. And perhaps I'm an old Western angled liberal, but I think there is a fundamental contradiction there between the buttressing, the strengthening of the party state and the innovation which is needed. And you see that some of the biggest innovative sectors in China, notably, let's say, the online sector, which has gone ahead at an enormous rate, setting world records, that, in effect, if you look at it, takes place within a state-regulated ring and is part, in a sense, of the party-state apparatus. And the question is, you know, if things became difficult at some point and the leadership was putting the preservation and the strengthening of the party state first, would that have a negative effect on economic stability? Not so much economic growth, but economic stability in an economy where an awful lot of the commanding heights are still controlled by the central Communist Party and government.
Jonathan Fenby. Next, more from UBS Wealth Management's Thomas and Sandra on the real estate market. A look at how the sector interlinks with so many others. Back to the UBS Wealth Management CIO report co-authors, Thomas Verragut and Sandra Wiedmer. And Thomas, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the property sector compared to others. People often suggest, and I know in the report you make this point, that it's the most important sector really in the Chinese economy because there are so many different stakeholders who are exposed to it. Perhaps you can tell us a bit about why that's the case and how that works.
We have in China, as you know, from the Politburo every 5 years, some goal that fixed regarding increase in wealth, increase in welfare, but also regarding economic growth. So this go down to the local governments and to the cities, and they all have to try to match the goal that was set by the Politburo. And so many local governments and cities growing into real estate is the easy way to reach the goals that are set by the central government. And also there is a big thinking and belief regarding the Chinese population that real estate prices are going to grow forever. So you take the local governments, the cities, and the investor preference of the Chinese, and so they all agree they should do more for real estate because they think they will become richer doing that. So this is a big differentiation between China and all advanced economy that where we make the comparison to better understand why real estate is so important for China.
And that prompts me to ask you, Sandra, maybe just finally on this, although this may not be part of the base case, what would a big property downturn, I mean, presumably that would be very serious for China. It would be quite severe, even if that's not the part of the base case. Maybe you can just tell us why that would be so damaging. And I guess as a secondary point to that, which other countries would be affected by that? Presumably those who export to China?
Yes, that's correct. There's a huge dependencies from the GDP to, or there's a high exposure to the real estate sector in China. For example, private households, they have a lot of wealth invested in real estate. Also, local governments are depending on revenues they get from land sales and property revenue. And then, of course, we have all that other sectors which are in the supply chain, like raw materials or machinery, and all these will get harmed if there is a halt in construction or if there would be a downturn. And we would expect, of course, that the GDP of China will get slower. And also, of course, this would have an impact on countries exporting to China, because China is a huge purchaser of commodities, so all the countries that export to China, these are especially commodity-linked emerging market countries, would get harmed if the demand from China is lower. And also prices for commodities would decline, and that would lead to a redistribution of wealth from the commodity producers to the consumers.
And finally, I must just ask, what does all this mean for investors? We always like to get a sense of that. Perhaps, Thomas, I can put that question to you.
Yeah, I think that's the most important implication of the piece for us and for our clients, because we have this view that we deliver in this report regarding the macro picture. But most importantly is what we should advise to our client, even in a worst-case scenario where we would have a correction in the real estate market. And here, I think we would like our customers and prospects to understand that now, because China is transforming more and more and more, years for year, that also the investors have to change their mind and to share their preference regarding how they invest, how they diversified, especially between deposit and between the all liquid investments that now are available in China, because you know that investment markets from the equity side and also from the bond side have changed extremely in the last years. That means for our clients, we advise them to gradually diminish their investment toward real estate and to increase their investment in liquid assets. And most importantly is that the focus has to be changed from capital price increase to income generating investment vehicles. And I think that's the key for coming years. And if the domestic investor do that in China, I think that would be also a great help for China to increase the overall efficiency of the economy if then just investors focus on the best companies, the well management, the well managed conglomerate, and Devi particularly take their money and put their money in the sectors of the economy that are the most competitive.
And that's Thomas Verragut bringing us to the end of this 200th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.